Hey, has lichen sclerosis messed with your relationships? You know, partner, family, friends, even at work? Then you need to join us at the Holistic Healing Summit this May 13th to the 17th, because we're bringing all the experts. We're going to be talking about intimacy, sex, as well as how do you talk to your family, friends, provider, boss? All of those things. And this is a free event, live, virtually, so you can catch it anywhere in the world, May 13th to the 17th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We've got sessions going on all day. Get more information at lssupportnetwork.org/WHS. That's lssupportnetwork.org/WHS.
Hey, thank you for coming to listen to the Lichen Sclerosis Podcast. My name is Kathy, and this is our journal of learning about and living with lichen sclerosis. Each week, I either speak to someone or research an aspect of lichen sclerosis and bring you the information. I bring you the real talk without the medical jargon. And this week we have a fan favorite back, Dr. Jill Kraft. She is the Lichen Sclerosis Support Network medical advisor and a true friend to LS patients everywhere. She's an LS specialist, researcher, educator, and author. She has done it all. And today we're going to have part one of a two-part conversation talking about the research review that she did with Dr. Andrew Goldstein and Theodore Martiz on topical corticosteroids in the treatment of vulvar lichen sclerosis, a review of pharmacokinetics and recommended dosing frequencies. The reason I was excited to talk to Dr. Kraft about this paper was because they answered three major questions. Number one, do steroids get into the bloodstream? Number two, do steroids thin the skin? And number three, what's the correct dosing frequency of topical steroids for lichen sclerosis? So if you are interested in any of those three questions, you want to listen to this episode, which will set you up for the answers in the next episode. This episode was brought to you in partnership with Lichen Sclerosis Support Network, whose mission is to provide evidence-based information to empower people with lichen sclerosis. If this episode or any of our other episodes have been helpful and helped you on your health journey, please think about either volunteering your time or making a donation at lssupportnetwork.org/donate. Without further ado, here is part one of my conversation with Dr. Jill Kraft.
This information is for educational purposes and does not constitute medical advice. Speak to your medical professional before making any changes to your care.
Understand, I think we have to revisit what's happening in lichen sclerosis.
I just want to say I have this analogy where I say that steroids are like Pac-Man and they're just eating the inflammation. It's like you're clearing the board on Pac-Man and the steroids is clearing the inflammation from your vulva. I don't know.
I love that. And so let's incorporate the Pac-Man analogy in here. So the way that I think about it is you've heard that skin has seven layers. Mm-hmm. The bottom layer is called the basement membrane. What we believe, and we don't 100% understand this because we have not found exactly what causes lichen sclerosis. We're working on it and we're getting closer. We've identified some genes that are upregulated and downregulated that are involved in the process. We just published that paper recently, but we still haven't completely isolated exactly what initiates this whole thing. Unlike lichen planus, which we have a little bit more of a clear understanding on how that works. So with lichen sclerosis, all current information is really pointing towards an autoimmune condition. even though we can't 100% say it's an autoimmune condition, I say it's an autoimmune condition because I truly believe that it is. And so just for the purposes of accessibility and simplicity, we're just going to boil it down to there's a protein in the basement membrane of the skin all the way down at the bottom that for whatever reason, the body identifies as not self.
Okay.
We don't 100% understand why this occurs at different life stages. There's probably external stressors involved, diet, hormones, trauma. There's many different factors that could explain why this happens when it does. I mean, think mm-hmm. about people that have thyroid issues. Why do they develop thyroid issues when they're 30, 40, 50? You know, we don't always question that, you know, but when it's an intimate area and it's a scary diagnosis, we often say, what happened? What caused this? And the bottom line is it's probably a bunch of different factors like we talked about. And people probably have a genetic predisposition that's where their body's kind of wired to be at risk for it. And then basically all things align and then this inflammation occurs. Mm-hmm. So for the sake of simplicity, there's a protein in the bottom layer that the body identifies as not self. And then the immune system does what the immune system should do. It basically brings in inflammatory factors, which are white blood cells, which I envision as like white cotton balls.
Right? Okay.
And these gather at the bottom of the skin layers. And it's this inflammation and the mediators or substances that they excrete that changes the way that the cells above regenerate and incorporate different components. Mm. And our most recent understanding is what happens is that the cells above the inflammation basically incorporate different types of collagen that is stiff collagen, stiffer forms instead of flexible forms. So there's different types of collagen. There's collagen that makes up our skin. There's collagen that makes up ligaments. And so there's different strengths or flexibilities of collagen. And so when this non-flexible form of collagen is incorporated in these upper layer skin cells, the skin becomes thick and it becomes inflexible, meaning it can't stretch and give like it usually does. And this leads to breakage or fissures. And then thick skin is itchy. It's itchy. So eczema, psoriasis, all of these conditions are conditions of thick skin. And what's interesting is lichen sclerosis has the thickest skin. So it's probably the itchiest. So we have to keep this in mind. And so the way that I think about it is with topical steroids, what do topical steroids do? They decrease inflammation. They fight those cotton balls. So you can imagine them as the Pac-Man that's eating the cotton balls, right?
The white balls. There you go.
What we have to remember is that inflammation is not like an all or nothing situation. Sometimes your body's producing more and sometimes your body's producing less. And this is what explains the ebbs and flows of symptoms or why sometimes we have flares. And your local immune system is also dependent on so many different factors. We know that stress plays a role, okay? Mm-hmm. We know that cortisone, stress hormone, plays a role. Diet definitely plays a role. And then, you know, all kinds of external factors, hormone changes probably play a role. The way that I think about it is we talked about like skin has seven layers, like an apartment building with seven floors. The basement membrane is where all of that inflammation is and it starts to gather up into floors 1, 2, 3, right? Mm-hmm. And I think about it as a leak in the basement that's like spurting, you know, these white blood cells, okay? And then the steroid is coming down and basically Pac-Man style drying up this leak. Okay.
Okay.
Now, the important thing is that all of this inflammation is all the way at the bottom, right?
Right.
So that steroid needs to get down to the inflammation at the bottom. Pac-Man can do all at once on the surface, but if it's not getting down to those white cotton balls, then it's really not working. It's just sitting on top, and it can actually cause irritation, and it can cause other issues, and it can increase risk for bacterial or yeast infections on the surface of the skin. And so the challenge here is, remember how we said that there's that layer above the inflammation of really thick skin,
right?
It has to get through that really thick skin. So we call that hyperkeratosis. So keratin is usually protective. It's a component of the skin that's pretty hardy and strong. We think of it like with our hair and our nails. Mm-hmm. It's also what makes up calluses.
Okay.
And so you can think of the skin as almost being, you know, hyperkeratinized, almost being like calloused or thick in that way.
In the middle, right?
Right in the middle. And so it's hard for a medication to get through that. We call that penetration. How well does it get through that? So it's not just about the medication. It's about optimizing the medication to get it where it needs to go. Yeah. Any medication that's taken in the wrong way is not going to work as well, or it's not going to work. Medications are not infallible. They need to be used in the right way. I might have like the best golf club in the entire world, but I can't play golf. So I could have an expert golf club, but I'm going to miss every shot, right?
Exactly.
And so it's the same with the medication. We have to be doing it in the right way, and we have to base that right way off of how the body actually works.
Yes. I take your teachings and I let people know it's about optimizing the delivery. So I love the fact that now you guys have looked into the science behind that. And it's not just a theory. I can point them to this. Try to read this. But it's there.
So I think, you know, for any practitioners that are listening as well, there's intricacies in all of these choices, right? So it's essential to choose the right corticosteroid. Right?
Absolutely.
Because there's, and part of that is choosing potency or the strength, because there's many different strengths available. And so number one, you have to have the right condition. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's essential, right? If you put a topical steroid long-term on normal tissue, sure, you're going to get side effects. The bottom line here is that lichen sclerosus skin is not normal skin.
Right.
So there's different rules that we have to go by. In addition to the steroid molecules, we also have to know what it's being delivered in, right? That makes a difference too. So when we're talking about the medication, it's not just about the actual active component. It's about how we're getting it to the skin and through the skin.
How we're delivering it. What's the delivery truck look like, right?
Exactly. So the delivery truck can be a foam, it can be a gel, it can be a lotion, it can be a cream, or it can be an ointment. And I went in order of basically thickness and potency right there from lowest to highest. And that makes a difference as well, because it determines the penetration. Remember how we talked about how it goes through those layers of skin. Mm-hmm. And so for the really thick skin, like lichen sclerosus, that's why we would want to use a heavier delivery truck, if you will. And we would want to use likely an ointment. But it's the reason why people use creams or ointments instead of foams or gels. You know, most of those are used on the scalp, which is much thinner.
Right.
So it all starts to make sense when you kind of think about it and put it together. And then the final component of this is how we're actually using the medication. And, you know, that goes into how we prep the skin, right? Mm-hmm. How much to apply, how often and how long. And we talked about how that middle layer is very thick and that top, actually the top layer is very thick. And so the way that we prep the skin is we soften that layer temporarily. The way that we have to do that is through soaking. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you soak in a bathtub or you swim in a pool, what happens to your fingers and toes? They get shrivelly, right? Mm-hmm. And so that basically softens the skin. And then when you get out of the bath or a sitz bath, if you don't have a bathtub, and you pat the area dry, right? Because you want the ointment to actually go into the skin because it doesn't mix with water, right? Mm-hmm. And then we rub it in for 90 to 120 seconds, which we have no data to support how long that is, but we rub it in for a good amount of time because we need it to get all the way down to the bottom. We don't have to go crazy over that, right? There's not like a study that shows if you apply it for 60 seconds versus 90 seconds that it doesn't work. Like there's nothing that dictates that. The most important thing is to make sure that it's completely absorbed in the skin visually, right? And by feel. So if you feel that there's not that ointment layer on the top of the skin, then that's what you need. Just like when you
start feeling friction, then you know you're good.
You're good. Exactly. And I'd rather people do that than actually, and I do tell people to time it just so they get a sense of it. But eventually with all of these recommendations, the bottom line, and I tell my patients this, I want to give you the resources to manage this. This is a completely manageable condition.
Yes.
And ultimately, you're the one that's going to be managing it. I'm happy to help you, but you know, it's fine. Like if you have a high stress time or diet goes off the rails and you have a flare, it's okay to increase the dosing frequency because you know why you're doing it.
Exactly.
And then you decrease down the dosing frequency. The difference is you have control because you have the knowledge of it. And that is empowering for people. You're in such a better place when you understand the why behind why you're doing it and you're able to control it yourself. It takes a lot of the fear out of this. And I'm always available to counsel my patients, of course, but my ultimate goal, just as being a teacher, right? As a teacher, you want your students to be self-sufficient and self-thinkers and be able to work out problems themselves. And that's what I want for my patients. I want them to be able to have complete control over something that's now a part of their bodies.
Yes, you are hitting all of the points on every reason that we have the LS Warriors group, because that is exactly what my teachings is. We're going to get rid of the fear. You're going to have self-confidence because you're going to have the education. You're going to be able to create a plan for when you flare. You're not going to be like, oh my God, what do I do? Or this is gone off the rails. I'm going to have this for the rest of my life, because you have the education. You have the tools, and you also have the community to come to and ask if you get stuck. Hey, I ran into this issue. Has anybody else? Or what do we know? Me and the moderators, we're always looking at research. We're talking to doctors, and there's the other ladies in there with their life experience. And the transformation from when people come in and they barely know anything, they've just been diagnosed, to 3, 4, 6 months down the line, they're now in remission. They know how this disease works. They know how to take care of their body. They have taken back control from this disease is phenomenal. Absolutely. That's why I do what I do. I love this group. And if you're not in the LS Warriors, you need to check them out, because I get goosebumps every time I get a lady saying, I was able to have sex for the first time pain-free, or I haven't itched in a week for the first time in 3 years. I love it. Absolutely love it.
It's absolutely my favorite. First of all, I want to say that if you have active lichen sclerosis, it can take 6 months to get into remission. So as far as time frame, we can't just automatically assume that you're going to start treatment and everything's going to go away. I definitely have patients that have had similar experiences to that, where things really improve quite drastically. But as far as clinical remission, as far as my eyes looking at the texture of your skin, it can sometimes take 3 months, 6 months, maybe even, you know, longer to really achieve full remission. So I think having a realistic timeline is very important, because otherwise people get really discouraged if they feel like things aren't working right away. And the other thing that I want to say is I completely acknowledge that topical steroids are not for everybody. Okay. There's definitely people that for whatever reason cannot tolerate topical steroids. And I want to recognize those people. And when we're talking about topical steroids, I'm really talking about what the research supports and what works for most, right? And what works for most may not work for a specific individual. And then if that's the case, then that's where you really want to see a specialist and find out and troubleshoot within these parameters to find out what's going to work for you. So sometimes we'll use immunomodulators instead of topical steroids. Sometimes I've had patients that have been allergic to the base of the steroid, and we've tried different brands and they can only use a specific brand.
We have a few people in the membership who are allergic to the base and they have theirs specifically compounded.
I've done that as well. I've compounded these medications. And, you know, I'll tell you, I didn't learn this in medical school. I didn't learn this in residency. Doctors do not learn all the logistics of all of this stuff. And someone who's doing hysterectomies and seeing babies and doing all this stuff, who maybe sees like two cases of lichen sclerosis a year, isn't going to have the experience to have to try all of these different things. Some of this is trial and error. I don't have a secret database that I can look up and be like, this is what I do in this very unique, special situation that only affects a few patients. Just like face care, right? Like you have to try different things for your face to see what you react to and what's going to work. And, you know, does a retinol work for you? Does a hyaluronic acid? How often do you? Some of it's just like very individual. And the vulva is skin. It's the same as the face. It's skin. And so we have to give ourselves some grace. A lot of the logistics that I've learned from patients. And I've learned because I work with my patients and we figure it out. And I'm honest. I'm like, listen, like I'm going to try to compound this for you. I talked to the pharmacist. We had a full discussion. I don't think this is going to irritate you. I'm hopeful it's going to work, but I can't guarantee that. We're going to have to see.
Right? I love that. You know why? Yeah. Because you're being a partner with your patient in this journey. And a lot of the times doctors, they don't want to be partners. They're like, okay, here you go. This is going to be on your way. This is your prescription. Bye. And sometimes when we go in and we're like, look, this is not working, or this is causing this, they're like, impossible. That can't happen. Or it's in your head, or you're not doing it right. And then we get frustrated because we know our bodies, you know? And so I love the fact that not only are you being a partner, which I completely teach all the time, but you're also having plan A, plan B, plan C. It's so important for our mental health that we know that if this doesn't work, we have something else to try. It's not the end of the world. We don't have to be resigned to live like this forever. So I love, love, love that.
To be fair, though, I'm able to do that for a couple of different reasons, right? Number one, this is what I specialize in. I only see about five different conditions. If you see five things, you better be good at those five things, right? So that's number one. I stopped delivering babies. I no longer do hysterectomies. I don't do any cancer surgeries. I don't do anything like that, you know? And so to be fair, yes, I do five things and I do them very well, right? Because I'm able to just do those five things. And then the other part of this is I have a specialized practice that allows me to do it, right? Mm-hmm. I'm able to spend the time needed for my patients. I'm able to limit the number of patients that I have so I can give that individualized above and beyond treatment. Yeah. Experience to my patients. I'm able to think outside of the box because I read all of the research. I write a lot of the research. I mean, yeah. I do a lot of the research. And so to be fair, your OBGYN who is on call once a week, delivering babies, seeing you for your annual exam, seeing patients in 15-minute time slots because that's what they need to keep their lights on and their practice running. It's really hard for them to be, you know, completely well-versed in all of this stuff. They don't speak on it on a daily basis. They're not doing research on it. They don't have 800 to 1,000 patients with this condition where they've literally seen everything that can possibly happen. So they know, oh yeah, I remember a patient who had this. I'm going to go ahead and compound that medication because it worked for that patient. So I think it will work for this patient. You know, they just don't have it. And so be nice to your, be nice to your doctors. But I think what doctors can do is that if you do have a complicated patient or a patient who's not responding to first line treatment, refer. Please refer.
That's my issue.
That's the biggest thing. And the other thing is there's only so much you can do on your own. This is a condition that does unfortunately have a very small risk of precancer and cancer. That risk is very small. Let me underline and exclamation point that. It's 5-7%. That's very small. However, it's present. And so if symptoms are getting worse and are lingering and are not going away and you're not responding to normal treatments, then it's always best to be safe rather than sorry. And a regular gynecologist can do a biopsy. That would be the next step. That's what I would do. And if they do find, you know, something like a precancer or something like that, then they'll refer you to the appropriate people. But you definitely don't want to, you know, just try to keep treating yourself if things are not getting better.
I say that all the time. Give your doctor grace because they are overworked, especially the last 2 years, and they don't have the time to read every paper. But my issue is the doctors who dismiss and don't refer. That's my issue. And that's why I think it's so important the work that the Lichen Sclerosis Support Network is going to be doing, because we want to create that easy education piece for the doctors who are interested to be able to come in and spend whatever time it takes to get that core knowledge that they need, that at the very least they can recognize it and refer. They don't have to become experts about it, but they can recognize it and refer. And they have at least the minimum that they need.
Sometimes referral is the most compassionate thing that a doctor can do. And let me tell you, I refer out. Like if it is something that it is not my area, like I don't do surgery for endometriosis. I can clinically have a suspicion that you may have endometriosis. My job is to kind of figure that out and to have recommendations on who to send you. That's an extra layer of being nice, right? But like, I'm not an expert in endometriosis. It's not my area. And so I refer. And I have to say, patients appreciate that.
So much.
Of my patients who I've referred, especially if you give them someone really good to see,
yes,
they are so appreciative that you basically are steering them in the right direction. And they don't, I think people understand that doctors don't know everything about every part of the body, right?
Right.
I think that people understand that. I agree. I think referral is very important. And doctors that refer to me, I appreciate them so much. They're doctors that I would send patients back to. And they're doctors that, if they have other GYN issues, I'll definitely be like, oh, yes, you should definitely go to this doctor because she knows her limitations. She knows her strengths.
Yes.
And she knows when to refer and when to, move forward. So I think that's really important.
I just want to clarify, the LS creates the inflammation, and then the inflammation is what creates the symptoms. And so the steroid then reduces the inflammation, which then reduces or removes the symptoms. But the LS never stops creating the inflammation, right? Like
Correct.
The steroids don't make the LS stop creating the inflammation.
Correct. And the levels of inflammation can naturally flux, meaning
right.
like you can have more or less inflammation, they can wax and wane. And that's whether you're on steroids or not. If we could find a way to target that protein that we don't know what it is, that would be the optimal thing to really stop this whole process at the very
beginning. That's the cure, right? Because if we could stop the LS from creating the inflammation, then we've cured the disease.
You got it. And that's what we're working on right now. And we're getting closer and closer to trying to figure this out. And even if we can't, and then, stopping that protein, that may look like a drug that are topical that's targeted to it. There's a lot of different potential ways that you can do this, but that would be the ultimate goal. Right now, the best that we have is the next step, which is to decrease the inflammation that's being produced. And when we say inflammation, I want to underscore this is local inflammation in the skin. We're not talking about systemic whole body inflammation. We're talking about localized inflammation. And the reason why lichen sclerosis occurs where it does is because those are the areas that have that protein. So generally, for whatever reason, that protein is expressed in the vulvar area and around the anus, and it's more likely in women. Now, lichen sclerosis can happen on other areas of the body. It just means that whatever that protein is, it's expressed on other areas of the body. It's just much more rare.
I've had some ladies who have had redness and it goes down the thigh, like the inside of the thigh.
It's not lichen sclerosis.
Okay.
The other thing about lichen sclerosis is it's not red. Lichen sclerosis right. is not red. If you have redness, then it's either, so first of all, the vulva can be red for many different reasons. Like it can normally be red because of blood flow in the labia. But if you have redness, you really want to rule out a superimposed infection, whether that be bacterial or fungal, because that is more likely the cause. It's not worsening of the lichen sclerosis. And the other thing is that steroids do decrease inflammation, right? And so they're fighting the immune system. So there is a slight increased risk for yeast infection on the skin, as well as bacterial infection on the skin. That risk is very low. So if you all of a sudden out of nowhere, you're in remission and you develop symptoms, and those symptoms are kind of out of characteristic, or if it's red, it's more likely to be an infection on the skin rather than a flare of the lichen sclerosis.
Yeah, and the other part of it as well.
If you go to a gynecologist, they may collect a swab for yeast, but the problem is they're collecting that swab from inside the vagina. That is not telling you what's happening on the outside. You know, I liken it to a diaper rash in a baby, right? So how are you going to determine that based on an internal swab inside the vagina? Of course, right. that's probably going to be negative.
What about go in the opposite direction? What if you're using the topical steroids and you get more whitening of the skin? I've had a couple ladies express that as well, that they started using the steroids and the whitening spread, or they got more whitening.
You know, it's we don't 100% know why that would happen. My suspicion is that with the return of normal texture, perhaps the whitening is more prominent. That might be a possibility. What I see overwhelmingly is that the whitening either stays the same or it becomes a little bit more subtle over time instead of seeing more. But we have a lot to learn with this, right? We have a lot to learn.
That's something they should go back to their doctor to check on. Yeah.
I would, in those cases, I would definitely be evaluated just to make sure that, number one, they're applying the steroid in the right places, make sure that they're applying it in the most effective manner, and also to ensure that there's nothing more worrisome going on that would require a biopsy. But, you know, the other part of this that we have to recognize, and a lot of my patients will tell me this, they have never looked at that area more until after they get their diagnosis, right?
So true.
Like, this is something where, like, they have never looked at their vulva in, like, 30 years, and then all of a sudden they get this diagnosis, and they're, like, taking pictures on, like, a secret file on their phone. Yes. And you know what? I mean, we laugh, but this is human nature. Like, of course you're going to do it. I have patients that have, like, a full file. It's like, they'll just scroll through. Oh, I have to show you.
Like, 2 weeks ago.
But, and we laugh about it because it's natural. It's like, what, you know, it's expected. And so the other part of this is people will start to notice things that may be normal or maybe of no consequence just because they're just looking all the time. You know, it's very normal to have little like papules or bumps on the labia minora or inside. And that's completely normal. It's something that a lot of people won't even notice usually. And like people have it even that don't have lichen sclerosis. But I'll have my lichen sclerosis patients say, I noticed this, or, you know, is that my hymen? Or like, you know, isn't it supposed to be like that? Just because they're looking more mm-hmm. often. So that's the other part that we have to recognize.
So let's go back to the redness, because we've talked a lot about the vulvar skin. We know we can get LS around the anus. If you're using the steroid and you start getting redness around the anus and maybe that redness starts spreading, is that a reaction to the steroid, or is that LS, or is that yeast?
Yeah.
I mean, so like,
this is the challenge, right? It's, if it's redness, it's unlikely to be LS. So, right. Okay. Most likely it's either yeast or it could be irritation from the steroid. We know that the skin around the anus, tends to be a little bit thinner. And so I do have patients that don't tolerate an ultra potent steroid in the perianal area or around the anus quite as well. And so then that's where, you know, my thinking comes in, and I think, okay, well, we need to change the potency, right? Oh, or we need to change the delivery system, or we need to change the frequency. So there's ways that we can basically optimize this by changing those different factors and to get to what's going to work for you. So sometimes I'll use a lower potency steroid like triamcinolone. Sometimes I'll use a cream around the perianal area instead of an ointment or so forth. And some of it is a little bit of troubleshooting. But the biggest part is to make sure that it is actually lichen sclerosus that you're treating around the anus, and it's not something else. In the setting of redness, you need to start thinking about something else. The most common reason that people have a red ring around the anus is definitely yeast, which we know is colonized in the GI tract. And so I see that quite often.
I've heard about women who say the steroid caused them to have atrophy. Can the steroid kind of increase the atrophy, or is it more of you probably haven't really been looking down there and now you're noticing it now that you're starting the steroid?
So a couple thoughts on this. First of all, we know that estrogen plays a role, not necessarily in the pathophysiology of lichen sclerosis, but it can certainly make the symptoms more prominent, because if the skin is not very plump and healthy and the skin is dry, then it's going to make the itching worse. It's kind of like having eczema or psoriasis on top of winter weather and dry skin, right? And then that's why a lot of patients are diagnosed in menopause. And there may be a connection there as well that we haven't really completely understood. We know that younger women and premenopausal women get lichen sclerosis. That's one of the big causes that I have, is to bring light to this, because these are the women that are often misdiagnosed and have a very large delay in diagnosis. But we know that there is a contribution of hormones to the symptoms that people have, whether that's a result of LS or not. So it's often necessary, if someone does have genitourinary syndrome of menopause, which is GSM, or the fancy new word for atrophy due to lack of estrogen, we know that they benefit from local estradiol, which is estrogen. And then my argument is they actually benefit from a bit of local testosterone as well, applied to the gland openings that are producing their natural lubrication at the vestibule, which is the vaginal opening. I want to underscore that there are hardly any contraindications to local estrogen. And when we talk about local estrogen, we're not talking about hormone replacement through the entire body used for hot flashes and night sweats. That's a completely different thing. Those levels are much, much, much higher, and that goes through your entire bloodstream. What we're talking about is a cream, a tablet, a ring, a capsule of estrogen that's inserted inside the vagina, twice a week usually. And then what's often needed in addition, at least this is my opinion, is a topical to the vaginal opening, whether that's an estradiol cream or a Premarin cream, or whether that's a combination of estrogen with testosterone applied to the opening area as well. And sometimes we'll extend that out to the vulvar skin occasionally as well. And so it's so important to treat both lichen sclerosis and GSM in our patients that have lacking estrogen in their postmenopausal period. And it's also important to recognize waning and decreasing levels of estrogen or lack of estrogen in our perimenopausal people as well, people in their 40s who are not yet in menopause, but their ovaries aren't working quite as well as they used to in their 20s. And so they also may require a local estrogen to supplement the skin and to make things more healthy. And then there's also younger women who are on certain medications that are decreasing estrogen and testosterone levels. And in the setting of lichen sclerosis, they also may benefit from a treatment like that, not necessarily for their lichen sclerosis, but it helps the symptoms of their lichen sclerosis. I don't know what your experience has been with the women in your group, but I'll often hear I started to, I developed lichen sclerosis after I went on birth control pills, or I was on birth control pills for a few years, and then I started to develop the symptoms of lichen sclerosis, or I started medication for my acne, and then all of a sudden I developed lichen sclerosis. And you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's caused by it, but it may make it more symptomatic because of what's going on from a hormone level.
Yeah, I think that's an aspect of LS that needs way more further study, or at least somebody needs to direct me, because I can't find a lot of research on hormones and LS. And I would love to speak to an hormone expert about LS, because there's so many reproductive age women who their LS flares around their period, you know. Some, and it's weird because some people only have relief during their period, and other people, they're most symptomatic during their period. So there's such polar opposites, but the timing is always the same every month. Experience that. With that? Perfect.
Yes, I can actually answer that. So basically what's happening is with natural cycles, with the menstrual period, the estrogen levels decrease after ovulation, and they're lowest right before the menstrual period. And so it makes sense to me that people's symptoms would increase when estrogen levels are low, just like they do in menopause. That makes complete sense to me. I think what's happening with the menstrual period, why people sometimes get relief, is logistically with the blood. I think sometimes the blood, because of the pH balance and everything, can actually be a little bit soothing. I have nothing to support that, but I've heard this as well. It's definitely worse right before the period, and then the period comes and it seems to get a little bit better. Everybody's different, but there is reasons for that. And this also explains why vaginitis or vaginal discharge symptoms for people who suffer with that, why they get worse right before the menstrual period as well. It has to do with the decrease in estrogen.
I do have some women who they have been told to like up their steroid use, like right before their period every month. Some women go on birth control and actually skip their period so they don't, you know, they don't flare. Do you have any kind of guidelines that you kind of follow with your patients around that?
I don't have anything that's generalized. I think it's, we approach it on a case by case basis because everyone's a little bit different. Everyone, you know, even people on birth control pills are on different doses of estrogen and progesterone. And even within those pill packs, there's some pills that stay steady dose the whole month and some pills that decrease. So there's ways that we can think about how they're responding and how the body works. And we can certainly modify things. But I don't have a one size fits all for something right. like that. That would be a bit more subtle and tailored to a specific person.
For my listener, if you are suffering around your menstrual cycle, talk to your doctor. Get a specialist first and then talk to your specialist about tailoring something around that so that you're not having to suffer through that every month.
The other really important thing that this leads us to is actually, and this was in the article, topical steroids, one of the effects are that they lead to an increase in transepidural water loss.
Okay, that down for me. I don't
Let
know what
me tell
means.
You
what
that means. So essentially, that means that steroids, one of the side effects of the way that they work is they actually lead to water loss in the skin. So essentially, they can be a little bit dehydrating.
And that's why we need to use moisturizers.
You got it. Exactly. And so that finding supports why moisturizers are absolutely essential for people with lichen sclerosis who are using a steroid regimen. I can't stress this enough. What I usually tell my patients is on the days that you're not applying the steroid, you should be applying a vulvar moisturizer, a vulvar emollient. There's many different ones available. It can be as easy as coconut oil, Vaseline, or Aquaphor ointment. It can be, you know, one of the fancy ones, whatever works for you. And just like skincare, there's not a one size fits all. People that are sensitive to lanolin should avoid Aquaphor ointment. People that are allergic to coconut should avoid coconut oil, obviously. And then people that are sensitive to petroleum should avoid Vaseline. But sometimes it's just trying out to see what's going to work best for you.
I want to go back to another side effect that I've heard. They don't start fusing until they use the steroid. And my explanation is usually that the fusing or the scarring, as the medical community calls it, is a result of the inflammation. And it's counterintuitive that the steroid would cause fusing because that's the opposite of what it does. Fusing happens quickly in mm-hmm. some cases. Okay. My fusing happened within a couple of months. And this is what I found out through my personal experience. I thought I was going to start using the steroid properly and it was just going to stop the fusing. It's going to stop my reabsorption. And it didn't. It took about 2 months before it stopped the process. And recently I flared again and started resorption again. And again, it took 2 months of basically every day and then every other day for it to stop the process. So what do you say to that?
So when we're talking about all this thickening and non-flexibility of the tissue and the fissures and breaking and things like that, we also have to recognize that there's another component of lichen sclerosis, which is the scarring component. And it's interesting because some people have quite a lot of scarring and some people have absolutely no scarring at all. And I don't know if these are just different phenotypes for lichen sclerosis or what, but I've definitely noticed this to be the case. Basically, what happens with scarring with lichen sclerosis is that tissue that typically doesn't stick together starts to stick together. And this tends to happen in the midline, meaning over the clitoris at the top and the bottom of the vaginal opening. So if you're looking at the vaginal opening like a clock, I'm talking about 6 o'clock, so right at the center bottom, and 12 o'clock, right at the top. And scar tissue, which is basically tissue that doesn't have a good blood supply, it's not healthy tissue, it's just stuck together almost like glue, that tissue is indeed thin and fragile. Okay, so that's the effect of inflammation, but it's not skin with inflammation in it with the keratinized, thickening like you would see on the labia per se. And so that tissue can tear. And when it tears, then it becomes sticky again and refuses. And then it tears and refuses and tears and refuses. And that causes more unhealthy scar tissue to kind of develop in that area that is more fragile. So, you know, when we're talking about things tearing like tissue paper, yes, scar tissue does tear like tissue paper. And it's a similar reason. It's due to the inflammation, but it's not due to the thickening per se. And that's where I think a lot of confusion lies with thickening, thinning, atrophy, and so forth. And so we need to, instead of doing like a, you know, generalizing all of this, we need to kind of think about what's happening in the skin level. And then it makes a lot more sense why some areas actually do look thin and tear like tissue paper, and other areas are thick and don't give and split.
But steroid itself doesn't cause you to scar. Like, it wouldn't increase your scar tissue.
No, it doesn't increase the scarring. The purpose of the steroid is to hopefully halt things from progressing further because it decreases the inflammation. But as you can imagine, this doesn't happen overnight. Like you said, it takes time for the body to respond and those levels of inflammation to decrease. And then more importantly, once those levels decrease, it takes time for the cells above it to function normally again and to not be incorporating all these inflammatory mediators and to regenerate. So all of this doesn't happen overnight. It takes weeks to months to happen. That's why you may see progression of the condition while you're treating it first until things really kick in.
And another question that we get a lot is the fusing or the scarring. Is that inevitable?
The answer to this is not everyone has scarring or the same level of scarring. It really depends, number one, when you catch it, but sometimes that doesn't even matter. There's so much variability. I mean, I see so many patients with lichen sclerosis and no two patients are the same, right? There's always variability in how things look. So that's the first part. As far as resorption of the labia minora or fusion of the labia minora, that's something I often see. As far as scarring of the clitoris, the thing about that, as well as the scarring at the top and the bottom, there are minor procedures that we can do to restore function and restore anatomy in those cases. So if there's scar tissue over the clitoris, scar tissue at the vaginal opening, that can be treated with a minor procedure. I don't think it's inevitable that everyone is going to have scarring, you know, we shouldn't think, oh my gosh, this is going to close my vagina off. Or, you know, I don't think we should think in that way. I do think that topical steroids or any sort of treatment that addresses the inflammation, I think that it does over time halt the progression of the condition. But everyone is a little bit different in how long that takes and how they respond. But in general, people that are in remission, meaning from a skin standpoint, there's low levels of inflammation or no inflammation based on how the skin looks because the texture is normal, they're very unlikely to have further scarring once you're in remission. It's very unlikely unless you get a flare because something changes externally.
That's been my experience as well. I appreciate your time. I always love talking to you. I learned so much. I hope this is not the last time we do this.
Of course not. I always enjoy hearing patient perspective, and I always like breaking things down in this way because it's absolutely necessary, and knowledge is power, and I applaud what you are doing with the Lichen Sclerosis Support Network. I think it's wonderful that we have a directory of providers now, and I just see things growing in the future. So I'm excited.
Thank you so much. And if anybody wants to follow Dr. Kraft on Instagram or Facebook, her handle is @JillKraftMD. And if you want to schedule an appointment with her, you go to the cvvd.org and fill out their email questionnaire thing there, and they will get in touch with you. I just love Dr. Kraft. She is so funny. And hello, she is queen of analogies too. It's not just me. So I hope you have a better understanding of LS, and we've kind of laid out the terms that we're going to be talking about in the next episode, because we're going to answer those three questions. Does LS get into the bloodstream? Does it thin the skin? And are we using the correct dosing frequency? I hope you have an amazing week, and I will talk to you next time. Bye.